For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
We've been doing these weekend death lineup shows, which allows us to get caught up in all the games, including last night's, what would you even call that? That was like a Detroit team that wanted to come into San Francisco and show the Warriors how much better they have become. And the Warriors standing their ground and saying, we see you. But we're a lot better than we were too, and that was a really, really good basketball game, and I thought a nice little preview to what playoff basketball could look like for both teams, actually.
Yeah, I mean that's a team where, you know, the Warriors used to play them on like a Tuesday night, and we're like, okay, let's go, cheap tickets. But that's a team I would love to see in person now. Like, they are very, very feisty, physical, athletic. And yeah, I remember we went like a year or two ago and we were like, oh, shoot, like this Jalen Duren guy is going to like haunt the Warriors for like years to come. Like, he looked like he was a good player against us.
And you remember that game? Klay hits that three on that long pass to tie the game. And then they themselves lost Sadiq the game on a late second shot.
It was a buzzer beater by Sadiq Bey. I think it was bad defense by JP or something like that.
Okay, so what are we going to talk about today? I want to spend some time talking about Steph Curry, because I saw a stat that for the last month, he is like in the upper echelon of NBA scoring. We'll talk about Jimmy. We'll talk about our favorite player, who is actually not Steph, and that is Gui Santos, because he is getting a lot of playing time, including a lot of minutes and a lot of clutch minutes, especially last night. And something's going to have to happen when Jonathan Kuminga is ready. He has not been ready. And then when we do our Valk's Valley segment, we'll talk about the shakeup in these conference tournaments and sort of seeding as far as March Madness is coming. Because, you know, next weekend is when the brackets come out for the tournament. So that is coming sooner than I realized. And I'm super excited because it's the best time for college basketball, both men's and women's. But I haven't really paid too much attention to the men's side. Mm-hmm. But the women's side has been a lot of fun to pay attention to. So let's talk. Oh, and then I'm saying this right now because you probably forgot that I mentioned this last week. Our very first What's Brian Watching segment to end the show. All right, let's talk some Warriors basketball. Warriors! Okay. For those watching on video, by the way, you can see how this spring forward has affected, especially me. I'm wearing glasses this morning. Didn't even throw on the contacts because my eyes hurt from the lack of sleep. Good. I have my coffee. I'm ready to go. But let's talk about Steph Curry, because I believe the stat that I saw was since February the 8th. So today is March the 9th. He is second in scoring in the NBA, just to Shea. Shea's averaging 33 points. Steph is just over 30, almost at 31. And that has everything to do with Jimmy and to do with, you know, sometimes Steph gets hot in the second half. That's just always been his career. he'll have some first halves that are good but not great, and then the second half, for whatever reason, is great. Now, we haven't seen that, I feel like, in a couple years. When's the last time you saw Steph this hot that you can remember?
I mean, my mind immediately goes to that one February where he was like averaging like there. He was like posting a lot of 50 pointers or something like 40 pointers in like 2021 to 2022. But I mean, the Sacramento Kings series, right? Like he was just on another planet. Then that was most recent, I'd say. And of course, before that, the playoff run in 2022. But yeah, those are ones that come to mind.
Now, do you think, like what I said, is this solely a Jimmy thing? Or are they doing other things to help to clear him out, to get him space? He's still making some really hard shots, by the way. Yeah. Like, it's not like these are wide open threes that he's taking. There's a sense of alpha dog in him. And you know, this is kind of what we've been talking about with the Jimmy thing. Like, Jimmy brings a lot of things, but what he also brings is a ton of confidence, because he is unshaken. Like, he doesn't smile. He doesn't get mad. He's just the same consistent, determined face. And I think that has given Steph like a little bit of like, yeah, we can actually do this, because, you know, Jimmy, no one's shaking Jimmy. And Steph just looks like he wants to show people that, you know, he's still one of the best players in the league.
Yeah, I mean, not to say like I've been in this situation per se, but I can imagine it's like, you know, you're about to get into a fight and you feel way more confident because you have the biggest dude. But not to say the biggest dude's throwing any punches or anything. It's just you have that guy, so you feel more confident. That's kind of how I feel like this situation's been playing out, where I don't think Jimmy's been that amazing until recent. So I think that just his presence has given Steph like, okay, I'm going to try now, and I'm going to really try. And I think that he's been capable of this, but I think we even said it. Like, I have just like, he has no help. There's no reason. Like, there's no point. Like, I would hate to be, you know, we were going to be what the Phoenix Suns are if nothing ever happened. Like, we would just continue to lose and lose and lose, and we wouldn't have made the playoffs, or we wouldn't have made the play in. So yeah, I think just having Jimmy Butler there just gives them confidence, even if he's not playing outstanding, which I feel like he wasn't until, you know, last game he was awesome. Game before against the Knicks, I felt like he was good. But there are just so many times like where he's just like, I'm like, man, this is what I meant to text my buddy Obi. Like, is this what I'm supposed to expect? How about when he like he's just sometimes goes up for like just trying to get contact that he misses like wide open layups. Have you seen that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what the hell's going on here?
You know, Draymond does the same exact thing. He just doesn't do it in a very athletic way. Like,
yeah, but I trust Jimmy to make more of like a simple layup than I do Draymond.
Yeah,
you know,
so the Jimmy thing, he started shooting the three yesterday, last night,
hit two of them. I think
it does not look like it's going in. It actually looks like it has a very small percentage of chance of going in, because it's a line drive, and sometimes he's like kind of shooting it off 1 foot.
Mm-hmm.
But that started to go in, which was great to see. He's still not rushing anything. He's not searching. He's not hunting for his shot, even when they need him in opportunities to hunt for his shot. What he's doing is actually pretty interesting. He'll get to a spot on the court where he uses his own gravity. Now, his gravity is different from Steph. Steph's is all around the perimeter near the three-point line and drawing people out so that he could find people closer to the basket. Jimmy's the opposite. Jimmy draws people into the middle, and he's waiting to see who is going to leave their man at the last second. And we see a lot of Moses Moody threes come from that. We see, unfortunately, sometimes some Draymond threes come from that, though Draymond was the biggest one yesterday. And this is what's, you know, I know a lot, there's been a lot of negative Draymond noise of late. His lack of compassion for Karl Anthony Towns on his podcast, which has become just the new barbershop talk, him and Baron Davis, you know, just shooting the stuff, which is totally fine. Like, it's, those guys are entertaining guys. But then when it's an opportunity for Draymond to just say, my bad, guys, I got the cat story wrong.
Mm-hmm.
He has to defend himself for basically saying that Cat was scared to play against Jimmy when Cat was dealing with a friend who had passed away. So, you know, Draymond can miss five in a row and they look really bad. And then late in the game, he's taking it with confidence, which is why he's the player who he is he just believes in himself. Now, sometimes he'll get the tight butt cheeks and pass out of open shots, but it's usually not in those clutch moments when he knows that the team needs him. And of course, he celebrates. He's got the best 3-point celebration maybe of all time, because he's just like, of course I was going to make that. What do you think I was going to miss that shot? So Jimmy's gravity and the way that he uses it on this team, I kind of wonder if in the playoffs, because you were talking about him kind of hunting for the foul, I wonder if we're going to see more of that in the playoffs rather than him, you know, kicking out for these last second shots, because of the fact that the Warriors got to the free throw line over 30 times yesterday. And if you look at the first half of the season, how many times did they get to the free throw line? 30 times. You had to count it on like three fingers or something. Mm-hmm. So just that mentality as well. Very physical game. I wonder if Gui Santos is going to get fined for saying that the referees were not calling fouls on the other team and only on the Warriors.
Gui Santos said that?
He said it in a very, in a sort of a nice way, I guess you could say it. He's basically said that the game was very physical. The referees let them be physical and they didn't let us be physical. He wasn't mad. He wasn't like blaming them for anything, but the way that it comes out in text on, you know, I'm sure some,
and English is not his first language.
Right. I think so as well. But like, what is the ceiling for this team? Like, can, you know, they're right now they're in the six, but they're it's a tight, you know, it's a tight area around that six seed. But if you look at, you know, the teams above them, the Rockets are three games ahead of them, but the Rockets have been playing 500 basketball while the Warriors have been playing 900 basketball. The Grizzlies are 3.5 games ahead of them, and the Grizzlies have only won 3 out of their last 10. The Lakers and the Nuggets are probably too far ahead of them
to even 2-3 is locked.
Think about it. Though, with LeBron hurt for the next 1 to 2 weeks, it's going to be the Luka show, and I think they're going to be fine with the Luka show. They may not win, you know, at the clip that they've been winning, but it may not be a bad thing for them.
I agree,
because it gives LeBron the rest as long as gets fully healthy, and then it gives Luka the opportunity to, kind of show how, you know, he may have to win some games with LeBron not being 100% and mm-hmm. As long as he's healthy as well. So that's an interesting thing. But could the Warriors get to where the Grizzlies are is an interesting question at 3.5 games behind. And we have, let me count out the games for the rest of the season. The Warriors have 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 games left. They do play the Grizzlies once more. It is, you know, in the middle of that 18. But is it feasible, or should we just be happy with 6 and just be like, okay, we're locked in, you know, they're good for 6? Because chasing 4 would probably mean more tread on the tires on Steph, Draymond, and Jimmy.
Yeah, I mean, I think we should just be happy with 6 just based on what we saw last year and based on what we saw just, you know, up until they got Jimmy this year. But I think it's all like dependent on injury, of course. Like, I just think if any one of, you know, Steph or Jimmy go down, then we're, you know, one of the, like, I just feel like the drop off for the Warriors, if they don't have one of their stars, is just maybe the biggest drop off out of any team in the league. Like, not that, like, that 76ers game was a little fluky, don't get me wrong, but I still think they might drop to the level of like a Phoenix, whatever the Phoenix San Antonio area of the bracket is, if Steph or Jimmy, you know, we haven't seen Jimmy, you know, do what Luke is about to do and try to will a team without his co-star. but I imagine it won't go great just because I think I said it last week, like there's just so many complimentary players on this roster, like, you know, which isn't necessarily a bad thing for contending reasons, but we don't have someone that can just let, and, you know, we're waiting for Kuminga to come back and maybe that could be the guy, but we're waiting for someone to be like, okay, Steph or Jimmy are out. Like, how about you? Can you help us get 30? Like, can you try to get 30? I know Pajemski's done it once or twice, but he's not someone I'm depending on per se to do it. I don't think that's, but yeah. So I'm okay with six, but I think four is realistic. It's just completely dependent on health. Like it is for a lot of teams, but I think just for us, it's the margin for error is so much higher.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Let's talk about Jonathan Kuminga. Still not back. I'm actually really surprised that he's not back because he is a younger guy. The ankle injuries are ankle injuries. They're kind of a bummer and it just takes so long sometimes. But I just thought, okay, you know, young dude, he's going to get back quick. This is not like, an older person hurting their ankle. But no, this is a really, really tough ankle injury he's dealing with. And I think the idea is that he's going to be back sometime during this homestand. But this homestand is also four games long. So I don't know if it's going to be it is six games long. So I don't know if it's going to be in the beginning. It sounds maybe more towards the middle or the end. So, you know, the Warriors play tomorrow, which is Monday night against the Trailblazers, Thursday night at home against the Kings, Saturday night at home against the Knicks, then Monday again at home against the Nuggets. So I don't know. We're talking Knicks time frame, Nuggets time frame. I don't know. You know, then it's Giannis after that. So, you know, there's some pretty interesting games that they have coming up where they're going to be kind of measuring themselves, right? Like that Nuggets game is a measuring stick game, I think, for them, as long as both teams are healthy. Nuggets have had their number pretty since much ever since the Warriors beat them.
I don't think the Warriors have won a game against Denver since maybe one where Denver rested everyone towards the end of the season. Like, I feel like that did maybe happen one time, but, you know, getting rid of that game, I feel like the Warriors have not beaten Denver since that playoff series.
Where would you like to see Kuminga sprinkled in here? Because there's some matchup stuff. There's, you know, almost every team is bigger than the Warriors. But when you have the size of Kuminga plus the athleticism, he can create havoc for other teams defensively as well. So I would actually
Sacramento.
The Portland Sacramento games are great for him because, yeah, you know, those teams are not as good, but those teams are also playing really hard at the same time. Those teams are not giving up necessarily. They sort of feel like Portland doesn't have a chance, but they have young players who are not looking to lay down necessarily. So those are interesting games.
They made Denver and Milwaukee a back-to-back.
Yes.
That's my goodness. I understand back-to-backs, but I don't understand like the NBA, like, you know, wanting to showcase its product. Let's put back-to-back. Here's this old team and let's do it for Denver and Milwaukee.
Well, but you know, then they go, but look, we're giving you the Raptors 2 days later. So that's when you can rest all your guys.
And I'm just saying, yeah, but you know, the best chance for like Steph to play. Do back-to-backs, but do like Toronto instead of Milwaukee and then do Milwaukee 2 days later. Anyways. Let's continue.
Yeah, so the Warriors right now 36-28. The Timberwolves 36-29. The Clippers 34-29. The Kings 33-29. So the Kings are looking at the Warriors, sort of how I was saying the Warriors might be looking at the Grizzlies. It's gonna be a tough game. The Kings do not like the Warriors. And the Warriors
punked them last time too.
Yeah, and the Warriors still sort of look at them as like a little bro, even though the Kings booted them out of the play-in last year. So,
how are the Kings been playing? What's their last 10? I'm trying to look at it right now.
Their last 10 is 7-3.
They've been playing well, and they just whooped. I don't know if they whooped, but they won that Spurs game where Fox came back.
Oh yeah, no, they whooped them.
Okay,
they beat them pretty handily. And you know, Matt, poor Mavericks, poor Clay. 32-32. They are losers of four straight. They're kind of spiraling out of it. No Kyrie, no Luka. You know, it's sad for Clay, thinking you sign a contract and, you know, the defending Western Conference championships, you're playing with one of the best players in the league. Luka's not playing a lot. Clay's like the old dude, just probably thinking like, man, you know, you're supposed to be carrying this team, bro. Like, you can't even get on the court. And yeah, it sucks for him. I feel really bad for him. Not that, you know, he's getting paid. You shouldn't really feel bad for these guys, but just his sort of up and down journey exiting the Warriors. It's a safe landing spot. Imagine some of the things that Nico Harrison probably told him to get him to sign. The shystiness, the grifting of Nico Harrison here. But yeah, poor Clay. I feel bad for that guy.
Yeah. I was having a conversation in my like basketball group chat, and I was saying, man, I wish like we could just switch Buddy Hield and Clay. And Obi took the side of like, he thinks Buddy Hield's better for this team, and I took the side of Clay. But I mean, I think there is like pros and cons. Like, I don't know if Clay would be okay getting benched the way Buddy Hield does on this team. You know, like, I feel like a Steph quote came out recently where he was, you know, I've texted you a couple times, like, man, it just looks like they hate Buddy Hield on the court right now. Like, I'm pissed off at him. I'm sure everyone's pissed off at him. And then a Steph Curry quote came out a couple days ago where he was like, I love Buddy Hield. Like, he's such a pleasant, like, locker room experience. He keeps the vibes up. It's not a verbatim quote. This is just summary of what it meant to me. And he was just, he was saying, like, not like a shot at Clay, but a little bit of it felt like his vibes in the locker room.
Yeah,
are like,
that's
so
that's
important.
What it sounds like. He is very well liked. Not only yes. by his teammates, but also by the media. He's cracking those dudes up.
But I think that's important, and I think Clay would fit better on this team from a player's perspective. But man, that attitude stuff is like we always heard it from the plus minus guys of how like that was like a drag for them last year. It was just Clay's attitude on everything. It just looked like he just didn't. He was just like, you know, annoying and didn't want to be there. So,
you know, the gracefulness of look, I'm going to stick up for Clay for a second here, because if Clay decided to accept, let's say Clay was like, you know, guys, B-Pods is the future. I'm going to accept being the heat check guy off the bench and a six-man role. I saw Andre do it. Andre was great. I can do this. You know what his agent is telling him? STFU. Because you've now just killed your market value compared to what a starting two guard makes.
Do you think a guy in Clay's position or his agent, like, you know, that care that much about it at this point in his career? Like,
well,
he's probably
what did the Warriors contract. Offer him?
I don't know what the offer was.
Oh, it was a slap in the face based on, you know, how I think that set the tone for the whole season, right? Was he felt that the contract was a bit of a slap in the face for what he has done. And Joe Lacob thought of it as like, dude, like, we paid you to not play because you got hurt like
2 years.
So we have the leverage here. But then when you have a Dallas Mavericks who are very willing, like, that's why the NBA free agent market is what it is, because you have teams who have space who can't get their A guy or their B guy, and they go, well, this guy, you know, this guy fits and he's still good, hopefully. And so, you know, then they signed him. No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I know things didn't pan out for Dallas, but I think he was right to take that offer. Like, I think he's been awesome this year. He's been, you know, his numbers were good. Like, looks like he was having a good time prior to everything happening. Like, just a little bit of an unfortunate situation for him based on, you know, he went there with expectations and he's probably like, what the hell happened? Just like every Dallas Mavericks fan is, just like every Dallas Mavericks player probably feels right now too. But with Clay, it's kind of like, I don't know if you've ever seen the Squidward meme where he's like, Squidward's like sad inside of his little house and SpongeBob and Patrick are like laughing and running along. That's just him and the Warriors right now.
I thought you were going to say the Wolverine meme of him looking at
on his bed,
sad, and it's like the picture of Steph and Draymond with Jimmy.
That one works too. But yeah, no, and I would love for Clay to be on this team, but it would be like, you know, you say like, just accept like being the heat check guy. But to him, again, he's probably like, look, I'm not the heat check guy. I'm a starter at Dallas.
And no, but that's what I'm saying is if he would have accepted that role and he would have been comfortable in his heart that that's who he was now, I don't think he would have been all that frustrated. But he was clearly not. He was clearly like, no, you guys are trying to put me in this role, and I am actually here, and you guys want to put me here, and that's why I'm frustrated. The Kobe in me tells me not to accept this, right?
I'm just saying, I think he was right to not accept it. For this team, I think that's what he needs to be, but I think he's shown that if he goes to a team where it's a very heliocentric style of offense and he just could catch and shoot, he's a starter. I think Orlando's probably punching themselves right now for paying KCP what they paid him yeah. and not giving that money to Clay. Like, that's a clear fit. Lakers would have been a clear fit. Although I think if the Lakers ended up getting Luka, it's not Max Christie that's in the deal with AD. It's probably Clay. So yeah. It would have been the same position anyways. But yeah, you talk about a lot of these teams where it's just drive and kick. Oh, boom. Clay Thompson's a starter on that team.
For conversational sakes, though, if Clay was a happy guy last year, he probably plays better. Yeah. The Warriors play better. Maybe he comes back.
Sacramento.
Yeah, they probably if they beat Sacramento, they're losing to whoever Sacramento lost to. So yeah, no, it's just, you know, it's just you watch him, and Clay will always be kind of upper tier for us. Just like, you know, Andre got his number retired. Always root for those guys post Warriors career, even if they're playing against the competition. But now, you know, from a fan perspective, the Warriors kind of don't have to worry about Dallas right now.
And not maybe, at all.
Maybe not for any of the near future either. So it's not even like Clay comes back as the villain, because that would be, you know, pretty bad too. It's like all of a sudden Clay's the one shooting the Warriors out of a playoff spot or whatever, and probably Phoenix flexing on us.
Phoenix probably jumps in now after I thought they were dead in the water, but they're probably going to jump in and take Dallas's spot. What a terrible, terrible way for Dallas to go out. Like, that trade happened and I was like, terrible, 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 terrible trade, but I think they are a contender this year. And then AD goes down right away, and then you lose Gafford, Lively's out for forever, Kyrie tears his ACL. It's like, whatever can go wrong for this team is, you know, going to continue to do so. And
Suns are still like 5.5 games out of the 9 spot,
but they just need to be at 10. Are they at 10 right now?
No, the Suns are at 11. The Suns are 3.5 games behind the Mavs.
That's what I'm saying, though. They just need to get to 10 and kick Dallas out of 10. So, yeah, if they're only 3.5 back, I think that's, yeah, they're only 2.5 back from Dallas. That's
2.5, right? You're right. 2.5.
Yeah, no, I think they're going to take Dallas' spot because Dallas has no one. They just have Clay. Clay's their best player right now.
Yeah, but what does getting to 10th do for the Suns?
It's just nothing. I just thought that they were absolutely going to miss this entirely. And which I think KD still will, but I thought like for sure he was not going to be on that team. I think for sure he's a Houston Rocket. That's my opinion.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I haven't heard all of the podcast yet, but Bill and Waz and House were talking about, they're doing their worst contracts draft.
I listened to it.
Oh, you at least the whole thing. I haven't listened to it yet. But early in the show, they basically they have a question is the Jimmy fit better than what the KD fit could have been? And what do you think about that?
I know. I wasn't sure. You know, they have been steadfast on that. They thought that the Jimmy thing was going to be awesome. And I wasn't like as optimistic as them. And they've been right. But hell, man, KD is just... I don't know if I'd be willing to go that far. But
yeah,
I will say
you're talking
that...
about vibes, right? We were just talking about the Clay vibes. You know, KD, not the like most jovial, friendly guy. Like he's a superstar.
Well, have you listened to the segment have you gotten past this segment?
No, where they... I just heard them start to talk about it.
Okay, because I think it was either House or someone brought up like, hey man, we just watched Jimmy Butler like be bad vibes for a long time too. Like Jimmy's not voided from this conversation either. And I think he's right. It's just classic. Like if everything's going well, everyone's happy. If not, then people get mad. But I think what Jimmy brings by getting to the free throw line and finishing at the rim is probably what I'll put ahead of him. Kevin Durant's a better player, but we needed that dimension to our offense to make me think that we can go to the championship.
I think defensively is where it's way better. And it's not because Jimmy is this perfect one-on-one defender. He's just so smart. Like he's actively hunting for these teams to make these bad passes so that he could tip balls or he could steal balls. He's like, he's just watching these guys make bad plays and he's jumping on them. And, you know, Kevin Durant at this point in his career, he's not going out to the perimeter as much. And that, I think that would hurt the Warriors a lot defensively just because they're already, they're already so small as it is. And then when you have KD probably playing a whole lot of power forward, I don't know, maybe they would figure it out because KD is also a very smart player. But that is the one difference that I think.
Well, actually, I think the thing that we're not talking about here is, which I didn't think about when they were talking about in the podcast, who do we lose to get Kevin Durant? We lose a lot more. And I think every single depth piece has been important.
Not
We don't lose Gee.
You don't lose Gee. You probably lose GP. You lose Moody.
Yeah, I mean,
probably
Kevin Durant's right when he talked in Draymond's podcast. Like, I cost a lot. Like, he understood what happened. Like, I think he now understands after the Brooklyn thing went down. He was like, they had to give up Mikal. They had to give up Cam. They had to give up Jay Crowder. They had to give up 7 first-round picks. Like, that's a lot of depth. And the same thing would have happened with the Warriors. Not to the Mikal-Cam extent, but... Yeah, probably Kuminga and Moody and maybe Pod. Like it would have been a lot. And
he's not going to cost that much going forward, though, because he just makes so much money and he blows up the spot in a sense. Not him personally, but him as the savior to save these franchises. He actually has not saved them the way that people.
That's why I think Houston makes sense, because they just don't have to give up much and they could just give like it's just like Fred VanVleet and like give the Suns their picks back. And I think that does the trick. Maybe Cam Whitmore for one young player.
Fred VanVleet. I was so excited to see him come back for my fantasy team. I think he played one game. He hasn't played since.
Oh, oh man. Have you seen my fantasy team? I'm so sad about my fantasy team. This is the best week they've had all year, and it was for me to make the playoffs. And now Jalen Brunson's out for 2 weeks, so I'm just going in just to come right back out.
How did the playoffs work in our fantasy league? Is it just 1 week?
I'm sure it's just a 1 week. We'll see. Yeah, I'm learning just as everyone else is. But yeah, I think it's just a 1 week.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about... I wanted to quickly mention, what did you think about Steve Kerr talking about Gui Santos?
Man, we are justified in our beliefs. Like, we've been talking about Gui, like, just kind of... casually, like in a joking way, but also like kind of not in a joking way, just because we saw what he did at his very first game as a Warrior at the California Classic, where he drops 30 points. And we were like, wait, what the hell? I remember taking a picture with him on my phone on Snapchat and typing in future all-star and sending it to my phone. But man, that guy's completely changed his game and knows how to, like, I hope he's a Warrior for life. Like, I think he's also one of those players where he plays super hard, but he also helps the Warriors probably more than he does most other teams.
Yeah.
But
he helps? He helps the smile on Steve Kerr's face. And also, when they break down the game, he helps them go, see, This is what we have to do more of. And it's just Guy diving on the floor. and then a bunch of other guys just rolling their eyes at Guy for diving on the floor.
Oh, they love it.
So let me see if I can find the quote, because Warriors Twitter kind of went bonkers on it because they're like, of course, Steve is going to say this because Joe Lacob is just going to be really mad at him for saying this.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, where is it?
It was basically a question that was asked of like, how is Jonathan Kuminga like going to come back? And he was like, Guy Santos has to play.
So he says, the challenge of bringing JK back into the rotation when healthy. The idea is to bring him along slowly, play him in short bursts. But we've got to keep playing Guy Santos. Got to keep playing the guys who are helping us win right now. You know who I don't need to see play again? Pat Spencer.
Ah.
He seems like a nice guy. But he is the least confident point guard with the basketball that I've ever seen in my life.
Not that good. He's not. He tries, though. What about Dennis Schroeder having a great game against us?
Oh, you knew that was going to happen.
Yeah.
I think, you know, there is something to some of these guys coming over and learning how to play with Steph. Like, I feel like if Schroeder had stayed for the rest of the season and then played into next year, he would have figured it out. His game is so different, though. It's long and herky-jerky and slow, and everything the Warriors do is motion, 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 motion. So he's just an ill fit. I mean, you remember the quote where Draymond's like, no, we got to fit around him. He doesn't have to fit around us. He always says that. It almost never works.
Yeah.
Eventually, they have to...
company guy.
Yeah, eventually, what happens is the players have to figure out how to play around Steph, and there's just an expectation of, you know, our whole offense is running these motions to utilize either the defense leaning to Steph to open up guys or the screens, and you got to be pinpoint in your accuracy in getting the ball to Steph at the right time, because he's always got multiple people hugging on him. And that's just not Schroeder's game necessarily. Like, he's like way more like ISO and, you know, like I said, long and herky jerky, and he's not like the quickest, but he could get to the rim because he's a little long. It just didn't fit for whatever reason.
I feel like the similarity, though, that could fit if everything's clicking on all cylinders is just like both the Warriors and Dennis Schroeder as an individual basketball player, like they create chaos and they strive or they play well off of chaos. And I think that, you know, that they could have eventually figured out. Like, I would like Dennis Schroeder on this version of the Warriors right now. Like, I think it would work. But
he would take minutes from pods.
I mean again I think it's another GP thing, like take minutes from GP.
I don't know, man. I see guys scoring the ball and all of a sudden it's like, oh, GP's in the game guarding him full court.
That's situational, man.
But you can't leave him out of those scenarios, though, because it looks like Steph really... It's almost like a relief for Steph when GP's on the court, because he's like, okay, good. I don't have to play so hard on defense because GP's like gonna help, you know. All right.
What we should do is, though, I have one more take before we move on from the Warriors. It's just I still think Moses Moody's been great. Don't want to take anything away from him. I still think that we haven't really played many like guards that are like just really quick, really fast. Like, you know, that one Mavericks game where Kyrie goes for 40 or whatever he went for. Then the following game against Damian Lillard where he went for whatever. Like, we haven't really ran into point guards of that caliber, I feel like. You know, we had Jalen Brunson. I thought Moody did a pretty good job, but Jalen Brunson kind of plays like a SGA or like a Luka. Like, it's not all super fast. It's like, you know, intentional movements and a little like they lull you. But you know, we haven't played like, you know, De'Aaron Fox is on the Spurs. The Spurs aren't going to cause us any trouble, but like a player like De'Aaron who's super fast, or like a Ja Morant, or like a, you know, I'm looking like, because, you know, Cade's not like that at all. But I'm trying to look like Trae Young. Trae Young, I think, still gives this team a lot of problems, but Atlanta as a team probably doesn't. But I think it's working in the sense of like, Moses has done really well. Pods is becoming point of attack. I think I'm still a little worried about those types of point guards, though. However, I feel like there's kind of not as many of them as I thought, or maybe not as many of them remaining on the schedule left as I thought. Just teams with that type of point guard that can give the Warriors a lot of problems because they're just really fast and really quick. And Moses just laterally isn't quick enough to keep up with that player. Pods is just not good enough of a defender to keep up with that player. And that's where I thought the issue could arise. But yeah, there's just not as many left as I was expecting. But yeah, I think Ja Morant's still one of them. I think Trae Young's still one of them. And I think Kyrie, of course, but we don't have to worry about Kyrie anymore. Dame Lillard's still one of them. But yeah, that's my take.
All right, let's talk about some women's college hoops.
Valks Valley.
Home run.
Now, our coverage of women's college hoop is always with an eye to the draft, though
yep.
Women's college hoop in of itself, just if you are a college basketball fan, there are, like, our favorite, The Athletic women's basketball podcast, they did a show, I don't know, like last week or something, about who are the teams who could actually win the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there's more teams that could actually win this thing if they get on a big enough heater. You're seeing, you know, the collapse of Notre Dame. Is USC and UCLA playing again?
Yep.
Today?
Yep.
Oh my gosh. UCLA really needs to win that game.
Yeah, I don't think they will, but yeah, they do. USC has looked a little shaky in this tournament so far, but I think that they're for some reason just UCLA's counter. Like, I don't know, like I have a lot of Kings friends, so I hear about it a lot, but the Kings can, for whatever reason, just never beat New Orleans, and it's like, well, now I think it's time that they'll beat, but they just are never able to do it. And I feel like that could be the case here, where UCLA, just no matter how good they are, they're better than USC against every other team, but for some reason against USC, they will lose every single game. That's my take. I think they will lose.
So what did all of the action tell you about kind of where we're going with some of the teams? Baylor is winning, and TCU is, like, there are some teams that I haven't really been paying attention to, but come tournament, you know, the tournament is an interesting way to kind of preview mm-hmm. the big tournament, because tournament style basketball is really about locking in, and these teams are locking in early. But, you know, UConn seems to have had a fairly easy run through this tournament. But then you have other teams like Texas and South Carolina. Like, that's 1 versus 5 right now. UCLA and USC, 4 versus 2. These are for tournament champions. Where are you with, like, do you want to, are you learning things about these teams who have to go through a lot of stuff in this tournament, or are you like, you know, who, you know, the easier run with UConn it'll keep them fresh for, like, the main tournament. Where are you with this stuff?
I think that you're right to start, like, where there is a lot of teams that I think that's just made it more clear to me that there are just a lot of teams that can win the championship. There's no Iowa from last year. There's no South Carolina from last year. There's no LSU from the year before. Like, there's all these teams that I think have a shot. Of course, matchup dependent and health wise matter, but I mean, Texas was the one seed by the Associated Press's rankings, and they almost just lost to LSU without Flaje Johnson and without Anissa Morrow, who went down in the third quarter. That's two of the three best players, and it was actually a tight game. So I just feel like it could be anybody's night, and I think there's probably like 7 teams that you could tell me, like, do they have a shot, and I could probably say yes. And I think TCU could be one of them.
Okay, let me name the teams here, and let's see if we have a list. Like, it, like, when I'm going to go through the top 7 or the top 10 in the AP, and you tell me when it stops to where there's a team that you don't think actually has a chance to win the title. So Texas, yeah. USC, yep. UConn, yep. UCLA, that's your top 4 right now.
Yep.
South Carolina.
Yes.
Notre Dame.
Yep.
North Carolina State.
NC State, yes.
TCU.
Yes.
LSU.
Health dependent, yes.
And then there's a bit of a drop off. Oklahoma.
No. Okay, so it's there. That's where we stop.
So it's 9. That's 9.
But I think even Maryland could.
Maryland's at 15.
they've just dealt with injuries. I think even Cheyenne Zellers, who I want the Valkyries to select, if, you know, there are other people I don't want to select, isn't available. She's been someone who I just watched their tournament game. I want to say who they play. They played Michigan. And I was like, I hadn't checked, because I'm not watching every single game for every single one of these teams. I'm just trying to watch like the one on paper that like looks like it's going to be good. But yeah, Cheyenne played like, it felt like 5 minutes. I'm like, is there just some health injury? There's just some injury I don't know about, which I think is the case. But if they were healthy, they lost, you know, a top score for them earlier in the year with ACL. But I think even if Cheyenne's fully healthy, I think they even have a potential shot, but I just don't know where their health status is.
And then Duke jumped five spots in the most recent poll. Kentucky jumped three spots in the most recent poll.
Duke's probably going to jump again because they are in the championship game against NC State. They just beat. Or am I thinking of a different team? Who's the? I think they are in the championship game against NC State, which means I think they just beat Notre Dame. That was Notre Dame just keeps losing, but Notre Dame's, I think, the team for me that can beat any team but also lose to any team.
Not only are they in the championship game, but as of this recording, it is the end of the third quarter, and they are North Carolina State by 3 points. But now 5 points. I'm watching ESPN's website right here.
I have that one recorded. I'm gonna have to check it out.
I mean, it looks like a close game. So I don't think we're spoiling anything for you.
Mm.
And then some of the other teams that have been rising. You mentioned Maryland, West Virginia, Baylor jumped all the way from outside of the top 25. To 17, and then you know, they were yesterday's big winner. So yeah, they play TCU.
I wonder if we can have a new number one seed if Texas loses today.
So who are your four number ones right now for the March Madness?
Today could change everything, because you could say today South Carolina is not included, but if they beat Texas, then they have to be included, right? But, you know, just right now, who are the top four? Is it Texas, USC?
UConn, UCLA.
UConn, UCLA. I mean, yeah, at 11:21 a.m. on this very day, I think those are the four. But
okay, so, I mean, and this is the reality of the situation. One of UCLA, South Carolina, Notre Dame, NC State, TCU. Some of those teams are going to have to be two seeds and not one seeds, because you only have four one seeds.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, basically what we're saying is, you know, we can go down to nine, and then there are some teams that are in the teens who have an outside chance, you know, to win in this thing. You're talking about teams as two and maybe even as a three who have a shot to win the tournament, which is great. Because I feel like last year when we looked at the brackets, and last year I was not educated at all when it came to
But we still probably got the top four right.
Like, yeah, because it was easy. There was a clear upper top in the thing. And now it looks like there's way more depth, at least in the top teams. A lot of times you see, you know, in the bottom seeds, they just get blown out like crazy. But yeah, this is going to be a really, really fun tournament. And let's end with this, which is the stars that come out of the tournament. I think even though from a television standpoint, this tournament is not going to do the bonkers numbers that last year's tournament did, just because there's no Caitlin. Like, there's no Caitlin, mm-hmm. There's no Angel Reese. Like, those are the two biggest stars of women's basketball last year, and you don't have them this year. Going to be much more of a spotlight on Paige for sure, much more of a spotlight on Juju, Olivia Miles, and the, you know, all three women on Notre Dame, especially if they go on a run. Is there somebody that you think has the potential to be kind of the darling of the tournament, who maybe people aren't talking about right now, but if she has a really good tournament, all of a sudden, you know, you're going to see her in a lot of the marketing and a lot of the promotion. And it's like, oh, this person has like charisma. Is there anyone?
I mean, I think Hidalgo I think she is already such a big name, but I think for like a national audience, like if she just puts on one of her games that I've seen this year and she is just so charismatic, like I think she is like the clear, you know, potential star for women's basketball. But, you know, I think an easy one is also Madison Booker, who is the best player on the number one team that I don't feel like it's talked about. I don't know if there's like charisma oozing from her, but she's just a good player. Mm-hmm. So those two for sure. I mean, AZ Fudd, I don't know what the last time she's been in tournament play for UConn. Sarah Strong on UConn. And then UCLA, like, I think a lot of people probably know who Kiki Rice is by this point, just based on the show she was in. I'm trying to think, like, any other top. But that might be, you know, the few that I can think of off rip.
Okay. Let's end this show. Like I said, we have a new segment. We're going to try and end this show with quick segment. It won't be long, but taking advantage of Brian's interest in the theater industry, in movies, and is called What's Brian Watching? All right. Come on, that was good. That was good producing. You know, you don't have to go through more than one. You can kind of do maybe your favorite thing, or if there's more than one favorite thing. What are you watching?
I went to the theater on Thursday to watch Mickey 17, which
is that as wacky as it looked in the trailer?
Yeah, but I loved it. It's Bong Joon-ho's latest film. He was the one who directed Parasite, that won Best Picture a couple years ago. So he does casted Robert Pattinson, who I think is just like fantastic, who plays like the lead and the supporting. So, yeah, I mean, the whole movie thing, like, I don't have like the historical knowledge that I want to have, nor need to have, or need to have. Like, I can think of it like for the NBA. Like, sure, I wasn't like deeply in love with the NBA when I was like 7 or 8 years old, but mm-hmm. hell, I was aware of it, and I knew it, and I knew the players. So now at this current time, I could talk to people and they were like, oh, do you remember this time? It's like, yeah, I actually remember what was going on at this time. But for movies, I never really watched many of like the quote unquote best movies of all time growing up. So I'm trying mm-hmm. to do that now and then gain that historical knowledge as well, because I feel like that is important for like hobbies that you're getting into, is to like understand, you know, what happened leading up to when you got into it. So yeah, all that to say is like, I still, this segment's what's Brian watching. And if anyone here's an actual movie lover, they're like, wait, he hasn't seen this. He hasn't seen this. He hasn't seen this.
No, it's all about time too. Like, not everyone has time to watch all these things. So you'll get to them eventually.
I'm trying. But yeah, Mickey 17, and I want to see Queen of the Ring. I don't know if you ended up seeing it yet.
I saw it.
Did you like it?
Did you like the Iron Claw?
I did.
Okay. Here's my kind of quick and dirty on Queen of the Ring. It is an old story from the 50s, from the, you know, 40s and 50s technically. It is a different time and place, obviously. They're trying to portray wrestling. You know, they're trying to take advantage of a little bit of like this rebirth of WWE, but at the same time, like, wrestling was way different back then. The thing I was most interested in is Ash Avildsen, who's the director. He is the son of John Avildsen, who directed the first Rocky and The Karate Kid. And both of those movies are essentially underdog stories, and you see the rise of the underdog. And in one scenario, in Rocky, he doesn't actually win the fight, spoiler alert, but he proves what he wanted to prove, which is that he could go toe-to-toe with the champ, he gets the girl, all that good stuff. And in Karate Kid, Daniel LaRusso, the pipsqueak, actually wins the karate tournament, beats the big bad Johnny Lawrence from Cobra Kai. So that, like, that underdog story is great when you're at the movies. You're cheering at the end. Yeah, you know, you feel it. You didn't get a lot of that in Queen of the Ring. Now, again, it's not really that story, though. I think there could have been opportunities to tell that story. When I watched the Iron Claw, like, the Iron Claw is like a very fictionalized version of what happened, but there were still moments in that movie where you felt tons and tons of emotion. Like, there's
like a drama,
sadness, you know, you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this happened. There's not really much of that in Queen of the Ring. So that's the thing that I was most disappointed in, is like, I thought I was going to get some, you know, feeling out of this movie. And what it is it's a semi-accurate portrayal of what really happened in the wonky carnival world, you know, of professional wrestling back then.
I'm still interested.
I think you should see it for sure. You know, there's some interesting performances.
Mm-hmm.
The woman who plays the lead, you said that she came from Arrow or whatever, that TV show,
yeah,
that you used to watch.
Yeah.
She's really good. I mean, she's really fit. She worked her butt off to look the part.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought she was really good. I think if they would have told the heel of the movie, the bad guy is a guy by the name of Billy Wolf, who was her promoter, and he was far more evil than they showed in the movie. And I think if they would have dialed up his evilness, you would have really felt for the Mildred Burke character a lot more. Mm-hmm. But they did not do it in that way. So what after Queen of the Ring, like, what's coming out soon that is on your list of like, gotta go for today?
Opus comes out next week. It's starring Ayo Edebiri. She's the from Beef. Oh no, sorry, not from Beef.
The bear.
Yeah. Yes, and she's been in a lot of things lately. But this
she was on SNL. Did you see her on SNL in the 50th? Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was good.
She I think this is her first like lead film or television show, quite frankly. So I think it's like the director is Michael Anthony Green or something. It's like his directorial, one of the first movies he's made, but he's friends with the big picture hosts.
Oh, okay.
But it's, I think it's like, if I can, like, I haven't seen the movie, I've only seen one trailer, and what I got from it is like, Io's like this music journalist, and like she gets invited to say like the, you know, like the Kanye West like peak of his powers. Kanye West like invites the music journalist to this album reveal party, maybe at like this private island. And then she goes and it like turns into like some culty experience.
Oh,
so I could be completely wrong on like, it's not this version's Kanye West by any means. I think it was like this guy hasn't dropped music in forever and he's like a legend and he's coming out of the woodworks to drop music. I don't know who that would be. And
is he playing a flute instead of rapping? Because then it could be Andre.
But no, I'm interested in that one because I like Io and I think she's really talented. But
that's interesting. I'm gonna start taking advantage of there's a AMC Sunnyvale, which is really nice, but they don't always have, it's not a really big theater. It's kind of a downtown, like little.
What's that one by the In-N-Out, by Great America? What's that one called?
That's AMC as well, but that is.
That one's like huge, right?
Yeah, that's a hike, you know.
Okay.
15-minute hike the other way, where this one is like
Mercado, I think it's
5 minutes away, yeah. But I have this movie pass subscription that I never use. And the reason I haven't canceled it is because I have all these credits that I've never used that if I cancel it, I will lose. Mm. So I wanted to do this over the summer, which was just like go to the movies Saturday morning to see a matinee and just go through those credits so I could cancel the subscription.
Yeah.
So I have to do that. And hopefully I'll be able to do that shortly because I liked going to see I saw Queen of the Ring Saturday morning matinee, 10:10 showing. Sadly for Queen of the Ring, I was the only person in the theater.
Nice. Nice. I would go see Mickey 17. I think just have like a fun time at the theater. Don't take it like too seriously. But there is like, you know, pull back the curtain, like themes. But, you know,
Pattinson did a good job.
I think he's awesome. I think he's awesome. So
interesting.
But yeah, I think like A24 is coming out with like this movie called like The Death of the Unicorn or something that I'm interested in. My guy Tim Robinson, I think that guy's really funny on I Think You Should Leave. He's coming out with a movie with like Paul Rudd called Friendship that I think is coming out soon. But yeah, Mickey 17 is that's a movie that a lot of people were waiting for a long time that was supposed to come out like this time last year.
All right, you got to share your Letterboxd profile or whatever with me because I only jumped on.
Yeah, I'll text you.
Because I jumped on because I want to watch some more new movies, and also I'm going through all the rewatchable stuff, and I'm kind of not watching as closely because I'm doing other stuff, but I'm trying to watch all the stuff that they're going to talk about, and so then I'm just watching more movies of late. So
yeah,
all right.
And then with the Oscar stuff though, I ended up, I said like the one that I think can go differently than what I chose was Timmy and Adrian Brody, and it ended up being a Mikey Madison and Demi Moore.
Yeah,
that was surprising. That was cool. The Anora did a sweep basically at the Oscars, and what's cool is that I actually went to a showing for Anora with my buddy Eric at the AMC Metreon here in San Francisco, and it was actually a director Q&A.
So oh, nice.
See Sean Baker take questions and talk about the film, you know, like just in, it's as if you go to just a regular movie theater.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then did you ask anything? Picture.
No, I was just experiencing, just letting them. There's a lot of us, but
by the way, yeah. I hope Adrian Brody, who played Pat Riley, by the way, in that Lakers series on HBO, I hope he never wins anything again. I don't want to see any more speeches from him.
I thought it sucked.
That was so bad. I was like, get this dude off the stage. There's a reason they're playing the music, because they don't want you to talk anymore.
Yep.
All right. That's it for, I think we're probably going to have to go again next week as long as our schedules are fine, because the Warriors play again on Thursday. Thursday's been our recording day, but the Warriors have been playing a lot of Thursday games, so we haven't been able to record. So next weekend, probably next episode. And then Brian can tell us what else he watched at the end. All right. That is it from here. For Bri, I am Double G. See you when we see you. Peace out.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.